Next up, a well-known Northern Ireland journalist says the law should be changed so that he can have the option of ending his life when he chooses to do so. Liam Clark has written in the Belfast Telegraph about being diagnosed with a rare form of cancer with a low chance of a cure. I began by asking him about his Buddhist beliefs.
Zen is a sort of an outlook on life, I suppose. You practice meditation. I do it daily, about half an hour a day. I occasionally would go to longer sessions, so not that often. And people have asked me if that's helped me with this, and I think it has, but it's very hard to know what would have happened if I hadn't been meditating for a number of years. But I think it helps you get perspective on things.
And perspective in that the whole point of Zen is that you live for the moment, right?
You do, and you appreciate the moment. There's lots of traditional Zen stories about somebody being on there's one about a man hanging off a cliff, and he can reach a strawberry, and he takes it, and it's a beautiful strawberry, but he falls. You know, every moment is important. Everything isn't just on the way to something else.
And so with that in mind and that context, let's talk then about your illness. How did you spot something was wrong in yourself?
Well, it was the smallest thing. It was I noticed a swelling around my belly button, an umbilical hernia, we thought, and the doctor said, look, it'll be about 6 months before you're seen in this in the hospital, and it's probably okay, but if it gets twisted, you could have problems. So I went up to Ballykelly Clinic under a sort of little health scheme I had called Benenden. And whenever I went there, there was a doctor there, Gidwani was his name, and he said to me, look, I'm a stomach cancer specialist. You may not have known that, but I've examined your stomach, and I'm very worried. And he asked me to get my wife in before he explained more and so on. So I think that's a sort of classic moment. A lot of people go in for something else and are diagnosed with cancer. I think it's a fairly common thing.
And so when the doctor said that,
hit you.
When the doctor said that to you, Liam, get your wife in, it must have dawned on you something was badly wrong.
Oh, well, I knew absolutely, because, I mean, doctors have a way they can communicate better body language. You could see he had a long face. He wasn't saying it lightly and so on. And he told me he was worried. And he mentioned being a cancer specialist. So, I mean, that was, you know, breaking it to me gently, I think. And I realized that there must be something fairly serious. So, of course, at the beginning, you hope, well, maybe he's wrong, or, you know, we need to wait till we see if tests and so on.
So your wife came in, and what did he say to you?
Well, he said that he'd discovered an omental cake. That's a swelling on the omentum, which is part of your stomach, and that, you know, he could be wrong, but he had a lot of experience of this, and that this was generally a very bad sign. And then he called and he said, you know, it was just before Christmas, the Friday before Christmas, and he said, well, we should really get you scanned pretty quick, but he was, I think, because he was Indian and he, you know, maybe didn't know where to get a scan in a hurry, he called in another specialist called Garth Beatty, who took over my case, and Garth was able to get me a CT scan that day. He knew his way around the local medical facilities fairly well. And it took some time before they diagnosed the particular disease I have, which is called PMP, because it's fairly rare. And there's only a few cases in Northern Ireland. But, I mean, it was clear from early on the scan. I mean, you had the same sort of thing, long face from the radiologist and so on, that they were finding something fairly serious there.
How did they break the news? Do they do it matter-of-factly, or what do they do? How do they do it?
Well, I'd made it clear to Mr. Beatty, Garth Beatty, the consultant, that I did want to be, you know, I didn't want to be kind of, I didn't want him treading in eggshells around me. I wanted him to tell me straight. So he was, he reciprocated with that, and he told me fairly clearly that he thought it was PMP at an early stage when other specialists didn't, and but he said that was only tentative and it depended on more tests and so on. And then he got me a referral to another doctor, Brenton Moran in Basingstoke, who's one of the UK, if not the world's leading experts on it, and who's now managing my case, and who I've seen once, and whose team look at all my scans and so on. Mr. Moran, as he called surgeons, he told me he'd done over 1,000 of these operations, which are fairly rare. So, I mean, he is actually the best person to be dealing with.
What is the prognosis, Liam?
Well, the prognosis is, I'm still kind of living with uncertainty on that, which is something that Zen probably helps with too. But he did say to me there's a major operation you can have for it, which takes, you know, several months to recover from. And Mr. Moran did say to me that the chances of it really succeeding were fairly slim. But he said he wouldn't know until he'd opened me up, because there were things he was looking at in the scan that could be a tumour on one part of my small intestine, or it could be mucus. He thought it was a tumour, and that would be impossible to operate on. But he said then an operation could help, because it could remove bulk, and it could be life prolonging. And he said, I'm not going to push you to have it quickly, but I think it will come to an operation at some stage.
Do they tell you how long you're likely to live?
Well, he gave me a more locally. I'd thought myself it was probably going to be about 6 months, because I'd noticed Audrey Hepburn, who had the same condition. There's not very much on it on the internet on people who previously had it. She'd lasted 6 months after diagnosis, and that had been. But I think there's a better prospect now. And when Mr. Moran looked at it, he said that he thought that I had years rather than months. I think that even if untreated, but that he did say to me, look, this is going to shorten your life, Liam.
How old are you?
60.
So what does it do to your mind when, I don't know, like, I don't know if you were like me, but I kind of always live for, I find it very difficult to live in the moment. And I always live for the future. Here's what I'm going to do in the future. And I nearly forget to enjoy myself in the moment. So what does it do to you when you're told you might have months, maybe years, but you're coming to an end?
Well, I suppose, Stephen, we all know that anyway. And, you know,
we don't realise it. We know it, but we don't realise it, do we?
You do. And it brings it home to you with renewed force that this thing is going to end, that life will go on, but I'll not be part of it. And it makes, I think it makes things like human relationships seem more important. It shifts your perspective a little bit. But it is really, that's really the way we should be living all the time. I mean, I don't want to go all classical on you, but the Roman poet Horace, he said, memento mori, remember death. And it's, I think it's something that Christians are meant to do. It's quite widely known, but it's one of those things you hear and you don't do it. People forget about death. It's a great taboo, and act as if they're going to live forever, and as if every little argument they have is going to be, is really important.
Are you frightened?
I'm not particularly frightened of death. I'm not, you know, you're keen to rush into it. I hope I live for as long as possible. I would be frightened of suffering and having a prolonged period of being not able to handle things, being in pain, being perhaps fogged out by drugs and so on. I mean, that hasn't happened yet. The symptoms are fairly mild. I have a distended stomach and that's it. So, I mean, I'd have to look at that when it came, but that's what would alarm me most. I think that there are fates worse than death, and you can suffer when you're alive. I don't think so. You know, suffering ends whenever life ends.
And this comes to the heart of what you have written about in the Belfast Telegraph today. You'd posted a petition on your Facebook page, actually, from the charity Dignity in Dying. So you feel that the law should change so that you can end your life when you want to?
I do. I think in particular, I mean, I agree that caution needs to be exercised in this, that people don't end their lives in a moment of depression and that sort of thing. But I think that doctors should be able to prescribe a lethal dose of something like the sodium nembutol, the one they use in Dignitas, to people whose condition is terminal and who are suffering pain and have expressed a clear wish for it and whose mind is sound. You know, we don't want it happening with people who are having, you know, episodes of depression and so on. But I do think it's something that should be available. And, I mean, an awful lot of doctors would agree with that too. Doctors at the moment can be jailed if they do that, but they can't be jailed if they prescribe pain relief at a level which which is intended to stop pain, but results in death. So we're in a sort of a gray area. I think it should be right out in the open that doctors should have the option of prescribing that to you, and people shouldn't have to go to somewhere like Switzerland, which a lot of people can't afford to do. I mean, it costs about, I think it costs £10,000 or £20,000 to go through that process.
Will you try to go there?
It should be possible to do it in your own country.
Will you try to go there?
I don't know. I haven't reached that point yet. I mean, I want to remain positive, and it's something I would consider if I felt that the future was that bleak. But, I mean, I haven't got to that point yet. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's an option that should be available. And I think it's an option that would increase peace of mind now, not just, you know, increasing peace of mind when it comes to the bet, but for anybody who's got a terminal diagnosis of something that can cause a lot of pain, suffering, and a kind of lingering end, will feel more at ease generally if they feel that they can call a halt to this, should they wish to do so, and they can do so legally, and it's not a nod and a wink thing with medical practitioners.
You see, you say you can build in safeguards, but I actually wonder, can you build in cast iron safeguards? And this is what some medical professionals would argue about, in so far as if that person is depressed and it's undiagnosed, they may be making a decision that isn't right for them, that they don't have the mental facility to do so. They may be coming under pressure from their family. And how on earth do you start to uncover that in a system, in a bureaucracy that's trying to tick a box to say, yes, this person has the mental capacity, or no, this person doesn't? There are so many complications throughout this that some people may die, may kill themselves, Liam, unnecessarily.
Well, first of all, remember that you're dealing with people who are terminally ill in any case, and for which there's no great hope of a curative treatment. So that's something. You're not talking about cutting somebody's life off in their 20s,
but
when
they still have life,
and maybe their girlfriend's ditched them and they feel a bit depressed.
But they still have life. They still have an element of life.
They still have an element of life. But I'm saying that's one safeguard. I mean, I think it is possible. I mean, we take decisions all the time about people who have the mental capacity to handle their own affairs. For instance, it's possible that the court can stop somebody handling their own affairs, and that is something that psychiatrists and medics are trained to assess. And I think you can make a reasonable assessment of somebody, of whether somebody's fit to make a decision. But do remember that this is among a very small group of people, not among the general population.
What is the... I think the context will be really helpful here then, because you're not allowed to do this by law in this country. What have doctors said to you is your future, contrasting to how you would like it to be?
Well, the future course of this disease is not entirely clear. I mean, I may get an operation, and that could change things. The next I could possibly take palliative chemo. The next scan might indicate that. But if this runs its course, I mean, I think it normally ends. What's happening, Stephen, is that there's a tumour in the appendix, and it... spreads to secondary sites by creating a sort of mucin, and your stomach swells out as a result. One giveaway should have been I was going on a diet, I was losing weight generally, but my girth was remaining the same. And eventually, that's not happening inside your colon, as in sort of classical colon cancer. It's happening in the space between your intestines and your stomach wall and on the stomach wall. And because it spreads so much, it's very hard to get it all out during surgery. Chemo isn't so brilliant either, because it's in areas where there's not a lot of blood flow to carry the chemochemicals. And I think that the normally how it would end would be a blockage or something like that. Your system just would be unable to deal with it. And
you would be in pain?
You would be in pain, yes. Audrey Hepburn died in great pain. But of course, there is pain relief now. And if it came to that, I would look at how effective that was and if it gave me a reasonable quality of life.
You see, I'm very aware this morning that I'm talking matter-of-factly to you, and you're talking matter-of-factly back. And yet this is so... well, not just life-defining, but so deeply personal that I just wonder, Liam, how you're actually coping with it. You seem so, so calm.
Well, obviously, Stephen, it hits you at times, but I think I do have a fairly calm and settled attitude towards it. I mean, it's a shock whenever I was given the diagnosis. It was a shock whenever I went to when I was told that I had cancer. It was a shock when I went to see Brenton Moran in Basingstoke, and he confirmed the diagnosis, went through the scan with me fairly matter-of-factly. I knew I was dealing with somebody who really knew his stuff here, and telling me that the chances of a cure were maybe, a curative operation were maybe 10-20%. That obviously shocks you, and you take maybe a while to get over it. But, you know, I was always aware that my life wouldn't go on forever. I suppose I'd thought, a bit like, I don't know if you drink much, but a bit like you, I'd eaten plenty, I'd drunk a fair amount, I smoked when I was younger. I'd probably thought it'd be something like a heart attack. I hadn't expected this. This came out of the blue, and it's something that apparently seems to be unrelated to lifestyle.
And just finally, all of the normal, I guess, some people are able to see them as very special things in life, which is the environment in which we live and the air we breathe and what we can do in life rather than what we can't. Do you start recognizing those things more?
Well, you definitely do. And I mean, anybody who really thinks about the fact, I mean, again, I don't want to keep on about Zen, but there is a Buddhist meditation on death, to imagine it's next year, to imagine it's next month, it's tomorrow, and it's later today. Anybody who does focus on and think about that we know we must die, but we just don't know when, it will shift your perception a little bit. It'll make you, it's a good thing to do. It will make you remember that, you know, these fights, these arguments we have will eventually come to an end. Though, again, if you talk to my family and friends, they'd probably say a fight and argue anyway. But I think it does help your perception. It helps you appreciate what's going on, that we're not always rushing towards something else. What's happening now, it's actually the journey that matters.
So what do you want to do now? What do you want to do over the next year or two?
Well, I'm going to work away as long as I possibly can. If I have to take time off for chemo or for an operation, my plan would be to return, because I think I wouldn't be very happy being completely inactive. But again, I'll review that. It's funny, it doesn't make you, I know you're going there now, but it doesn't make you, I thought, when it's something like this, that it might make me sort of want to go to Vegas or climb Mount Everest or, I don't know, cut loose in some way. It doesn't really have that effect. It makes it on me anyway. It makes me just appreciate the things that are going on more, and that's it.
Well, listen, thank you so, so much. You've been around the political sphere, obviously, here for a long, long time, Liam, and you're a very valued member of this community in Northern Ireland. We wish you the very, very best for the future, sir.
Okay, thanks very much indeed, Stephen. Pleasure speaking to you.